Thank you for tuning in to the Head Game Podcast, powered by Mindful Athlete Training, where you grab an inside look into the heads and minds of the high performer. Learn what they do and how they think to help you take control of your own head game.
Welcome to another episode of the Head Game. Today's guest is Stan Moore. He is a PGA certified coach that has been teaching the art of putting for over 20 years. He focuses on developing the physical by enhancing the most important part of putting, the mental aspects. Stan has risen in the South Florida market as a top-tier short game coach. With over 4,000 lessons, his mission is for his students is to become a peak performer and an artist on the green. On today's episode, Stan shares his well-experienced insight into the head game of a confident short game golfer, his unique take on the manipulation of timing and rhythm as keys to successful putting were eye-opening. He provides tools to become a more confident golfer with a clear vision on how to achieve your goals and even reduce your score. Take a listen and enjoy another episode of The Head Game.
Stan Moore, welcome to The Head Game.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
So, Stan, tell us a little bit about your background, what you do, and what you're passionate about.
Well, I've been playing golf for about 60 years. I've been teaching for 20 years. I'm a putting instructor, and that is my passion. And what I mean by putting instructor is 95% of my lessons are putting. There are many instructors out there who might say they're putting instructors, but they're really full swing instructors, and they might spend 20% of their time giving putting lessons. So I've really devoted my time into learning the craft that I'm doing. I've spent time with some of the world's best putting instructors, optometrists, various people who know putting in and out.
Talk to me about, you know, early life Stan and your golf game and how it leads you to, you know, becoming an instructor.
Well, golf was never my total passion. I grew up playing golf, you know, when I was about 10 years old. I played golf, but it was, never had a thought of becoming a professional teacher. Golf was just a fun thing to do. As I went through life, I actually went into business. I did not become a professional golfer. I always played golf, but I had so many other interests in life than golf. Golf was not the end-all to be-all, I guess. So I eventually got back into golf, and I started playing golf every day for about 7-8 years, and really formed a huge passion for it. And that's when I decided to, what am I going to do with the rest of my life at that point, when I was about late 40s. So I decided to go into golf. I got involved with the PGA, went through their entire program, became a PGA professional, and have just continued working to where I am right now. About 8 years ago, I decided I wanted to go into putting. Why did I want to do that? I felt like I was just another instructor in the sea of full swing instructors. So I wanted to be something a little different than other instructors. I always enjoyed putting, so I decided to dive into it head first in an effort to distinguish myself as a different type of instructor.
I was going to say, so often when you hear about the concept of putting, more particularly the game of golf, it's all about the mental approach, and it's all about being able to execute in a very small window. Perhaps, you know, one putt can make the difference in an entire tournament. Mm-hmm. Talk to us a little bit about the things that you emphasize in your putting lessons from a mental point of view.
Okay, from a mental point of view. Great. Well, I'm a believer in eye, mind, and body. So what the eyes see, the mind perceives, and then directs the body to act accordingly. So it's important that when we're using our eyes out there, I want active eyes. Why do I want active eyes? Because when the eyes are still, the mind starts thinking. And when we start thinking, when we're putting, we're in trouble. Okay? So I want those eyes active, looking to where they need to go, and then move to another direction, and then stay there until the stroke is made. We do have to target specific targets with our eyes. So I know in working with some of the visual experts in putting, they say we need to target for about 2 or 3 seconds for the mind to activate that target. Okay? So, you know, I've heard that Dustin Johnson and Tiger, for example, will target a target from 1.6 to 1.9 seconds. Jack Nicklaus will target a target from 2.6 to 2.9 seconds. Okay? So what that means is when I have a player over a golf ball, I have them start their putting stroke by using their eyes. So I want them to move their eyes to that target for about 2 counts. And on their 3rd count, I would move their eyes back to the golf ball. And then on 4, they would make a backstroke. On 5, they would contact the golf ball. So the eyes are doing what? The eyes are starting the stroke, creating a flow, and it really helps the golfer concentrate on the beat or the rhythm that they're creating with this count of using their eyes, as opposed to thinking of putting a value on the putt. This is for a birdie. This is for a par. I've got to make it. I've got to think of my right elbow or whatever they might be thinking. They should not be thinking about that stuff, right? So I want to create flow, and I do this with use of eyes, working with the mind and the body all teamed up together. And this helps the golfer relax and keep a calmer mind.
Yeah, there's so many great tips within that. And that mind-body connection is critical. And I like the active eyes. I really like that as an engagement state. A lot of times when we're doing our work, there's an ideal level of focus that you're trying to achieve. It's you're not trying to be hyper-focused on something. If you're hyper-focused, that could be internal, right? That thinking, as you're saying. But you don't want to be too passive either. There needs to be kind of an active tension. And you're looking for that kind of middle wave. In terms of brain wavelengths, that's actually called beta, or a terrible joke, you beta pay attention. But that's what you're trying to engage with, is that active kind of state where you're somewhere in between that narrow and broad internal and external, allowing you to kind of master.
Totally agree, doctor. That's exactly what I always say. What I'm trying to really create with the player is flow. If we can get them flowing, those things are going to work out just as you mentioned.
Stan, how do you define flow from a golf perspective?
How do I define flow?
Yeah, how would you break it down? What's going on? What do you think needs to happen for the golfer to find, locate, and then stay optimally in that flow state longer, right? Over the course of, is it hole to hole? Is it over the front nine, the back nine, day one to day three? Like, you know, talk to us about how you work with that
it's
concept.
It's a minute-to-minute thing. It's not a nine-hole to a nine-hole thing. Flow, first of all, when the prefrontal cortex takes over, that's the CEO, that gets in the way of flow. Okay? We need to be using the cerebellum in the back here of the brain to create flow. So one of the ways I create flow is I use a program called Fluid Motion Factor. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but Steve Yellen is the developer of it. He's worked with many golfers many different athletes. But what we want to do with that is get our mind activated in other things. And a lot of that flow is developed in rhythm that I mentioned earlier. Okay. Well, with fluid motion factor, we're kind of working to set into the ball. We usually say something like a 9 number, and we keep repeating that, or have the golfer repeat that. And that's not on the surface of the lip. That's deep within the golfer. Okay? So that's really being done deep within their body, within their soul, within the back of their mind. If they get it on the, if they're saying this on their lips, then the prefrontal cortex takes over, and it becomes more conscious. We want this to be an unconscious act. So we just kind of get up there and we go through this process. And then what we do is we do a procedure called set one. And when we set one, that's when the mind should be the calmest at that point. And then from there, we just make the swing or make the stroke. Okay? What I like to do from a putting standpoint is have a player walk in saying their nines, set in over the golf ball, say to themselves within set one. At that point, what would they do? Start using their eyes and going through the process that I mentioned a while ago, counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay. So they're creating a flow. They're creating rhythm. And you, to your question, what is flow? I think flow is rhythm. I'll give you an example. In this month's Golf Digest, Scottie Scheffler, number one player in the world, they ask him, Scottie, what are you thinking about when you're playing? His answer was, I'm thinking of my rhythm. That's what I'm trying to create, is the rhythm pattern. Okay. To me, that's what helps create the flow. So I think you have to turn it on and turn it off.
Yeah. What's really interesting is, you know, you went immediately to saying, you know, the prefrontal cortex kind of being that CEO, and you really have to kind of live more in that cerebellum. Where that prefrontal cortex is, that's that thinking, organizing, planning, right? But that cerebellum is really kind of one of its functions is that rhythm, balance, coordination. It's that kind of natural hindbrain. And what's really interesting is you eventually got to rhythm. And that's almost the immediate thing when you were kind of talking about flow and that timing, that sequencing was finding a rhythm. You know, I think it's important to recognize how to kind of find a rhythm, but sometimes even more important, how to kind of recover once that rhythm is thrown off. What are you typically teaching when you're kind of talking about trying to find that steady rhythm for, especially for the short game, that's so necessary because, you know, you might have a few miss hits kind of off the tee and kind of making it back. I remember the Masters a few years ago, right? It was pretty much your recovery ball was the critical piece that allowed, was it Matsuyama to win? And so again, it's how do you find flow, I guess, when you're out of flow? How do you find that rhythm? What are you typically teaching or encouraging people to try to connect?
Well, great question, Doc. Usually what I do is test the individual. But before I test them, I let them sort of discover what their own flow is. Okay? For example, in my putting, I'm very cognizant. One of the things I teach is specific stroke lengths. So I have a specific endpoint of where I want the player to take the putter back to. And I have a specific endpoint of where I want them to stop the putter once the ball has been contacted. So I give them design stroke lengths that match the length of the putt they have in front of them based on the speed of the greens that they're playing. Okay, arbitrary. Most golfers don't do that. They're just moving their putter freewheeling, basing everything on feel. Problem is, feel changes every day. So tomorrow they come out, they're going to be feeling something different. So because of that, their distance control is continually on and off. It's not consistent. So I work on getting specific stroke lengths. So once I teach a player specific stroke lengths, then I start letting them discover the timing or the speed they're going to apply to those stroke lengths. Does this make sense here? So sometimes I'll just say, well, let's take the putter from here. Let's go here on the backstroke. Let's finish here on the front stroke. We're going to roll the ball 10 feet. So they do that. Okay. Well, I have them a specific place they're going to take the putter back, a specific place they're going to stop the putter after contact. So all I want to do is get them moving from point A to point B. So once they're in point A and point B, I want them to discover their own rhythm and how to apply that to those specific endpoints there. Okay? So I'll let them do that on their own. And then once they hit the golf ball, where's the golf ball rolling? If they're rolling the ball a foot past the hole, that's the proper capture speed that the hole needs to roll the ball into the center of the hole. So if they're rolling it well past that hole, what does that mean? That means their timing is too fast, right? If they're rolling the ball well short of the hole, that means their timing is too slow. Correct?
Correct.
So we need to continue to, I want them to discover what they need to do to roll it a foot past the hole. So it's a lot of it is trial and error. I want the player to do a lot of this on their own before I test them. Okay? I think this is very important. Instead of me spoon feeding the thing to them, I want them to learn on their own what they need to do.
So there is some science, Stan, if I'm understanding you correctly, between imagining a pendulum of distance back, distance forward, and the timing of that then dictates the distance of the roll.
You got it.
On the putt, right? It's a science. But what you're really trying to do is you're trying to increase a putter's awareness as to the extent of that pendulum swinging, thus dictating how far the ball goes.
Lee, that's exactly right. Most people are not aware of what they do with putter.
Right.
Again, here's what most people are going to do when they putt. And here's what most instructors do. Okay? If you'll allow me this here. Most instructors, when a person comes to a lesson, they'll put three balls down and they'll say, okay, I'm going to watch you. I want you to roll three balls to a hole there. So the player rolls three balls. One's well past, one's well short. Maybe one goes into the hole. Okay. So then the instructor says, I tell you what, you've got a little issue with distance control here, right? Speed control. So I'm going to put a stick behind the hole about 2 feet, maybe 3 feet. I want you to roll all of your putts. I want the ball to stop from the hole between the stick. Okay? So then the putter or the player will roll three more balls there. Okay. So what has the instructor done? The instructor really has put the golfer in a position of not understanding what they need to do. What is the golfer actually doing? He's actually guessing on how to move his putter back and through to stop the ball between that stick and the hole. Okay? So everything he's doing is based on feel and emotion again. And again, that feel and emotion changes every day. Well, my concept is I want to put the player in a position of total understanding of what they need to do with the putter to roll it a specific distance that will stop the ball between the stick and the hole. So we're going to walk off that distance, first of all, so the player understands the distance. Then we're going to design a stroke length that matches that distance based on the speed of the greens that they're playing. Okay? Once the player understands that and then understands where to take his putter back and where to finish at the end point of his stroke, then he will start rolling the ball consistently between that stick and that hole and could almost stop the ball at the same place. So in reality, what I'm teaching the players to do is become human stimp meters. If you know a 10-foot stroke on a 9-stimp green, then you don't need a target. All you really need to do is make your 10-foot stroke with your characteristic internal timing that you have, and you can roll the ball exact distance every single time.
When did you first come up with this concept? Like, I know that you said earlier that you worked with a lot of the finest putting instructors. Is it a concept that you were first introduced? Is this something that you've sort of patented on your own terms? Tell us a little bit more about the origin.
Well, the origin is from other golfers, other instructors, I should say. So there's a gentleman named Chris Hahn that I met with Evolution Putting. He developed a piece of equipment called a flat stick fire. And this concept or method was developed through Chris. Chris is an expert in human body movement. So I worked with him. And there's very few people who talk about this. There might be only 6 to 10 people in the world who teach this. Okay. So I've been doing this for several years now. And the results have been outstanding from players that I have, from professional players all the way down to junior players. I had a lady text me yesterday. She won her senior club championship. Her last round, she had 10 one putts because she understands her stroke lengths. She knows how to find her stroke lengths. She knows her characteristic internal timing and how to apply that to her stroke lengths. And she had 10 one putts. She had a total of 24 putts for the entire round on her last round that she had. She played 3 rounds and she won her senior club championship. But that's just one story. I have many, many others.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's really interesting that, what is it, internal timing? Well, you said it's kind of the personal internal
yes.
timing. It's a really interesting kind of concept in terms of just that we are kind of talking about trying to find your flow. It seems like it can be unique to the individual as well. It's not just a one-size-fits-all.
Doctor, it is unique. So let me take this mm-hmm. a little further, if I can, and tell you how I test the individual for their internal timing. I would have a timer. and I'm just going to run the timer for 60 seconds. And I'm going to ask the golfer to stand in front of me and count off seconds. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4. And when he gets to 60 seconds, I'm going to stop my timer. So, for example, if I have a golfer who counts 65 beats in 60 seconds, well, then he has an internal timing of 65 beats per minute. Okay? 65 beats per minute from a time standpoint in a golf stroke is about 0.9 seconds. Okay? So a golf stroke starts from a putting standpoint, starts from setup to the back of the stroke, back down to contact. 60 beats per minute would be 1 second. 65 beats per minute would be 0.9 seconds. 70 beats, if he counted 70 within 60 seconds, he would be right at 0.833. So what we would do is, once we kind of figure out the player's internal timing based on beats per minute, we might then put him on a metronome at 65 beats per second. And we would have him working with the metronome, counting the beats and applying his putting strokes with specific stroke lengths to match the beat there. Okay? If at some point that did not feel correct, we might increase that a few seconds. We might decrease it. We're eventually going to work towards finding the best timing for that individual that matches their internal timing. So that's how I feel about testing.
Using the metronome, Stan, you know, what you're really doing is you're enhancing neurotiming. It's a neuroplastic, point of training in the brain where you're starting to overlearn certain, and this is often how people try to enhance the concept of flow. When did you first start using the metronome?
Oh, well, I've used metronome for years. Okay, but let me go to your point right there, Lee, about the metronome. The metronome isn't an external sound. So as a player, if we've got a putter, we're trying to match our eyes and our stroke to that external sound. It can be very difficult for some golfers to match that up. What we want to do, or what I want to do with people in the metronome, is really get that beat pattern within their mind. And I want them to start saying it aloud within themselves to do what? To internalize it. Because eventually I want to get them off the metronome, and I want them to be able to internalize it when they're playing on the golf course. So on the golf course, they're counting and using their eyes together. That is their internal metronome they're using while they're playing. So the metronome is there to help. It can be a crutch, and eventually we want to get them completely off of it, because it's an external sound, and we want to take that sound and make it internal. Does that make sense? A lot of players, I will say, okay, if we now have you at 65 beats per minute, what I'd like for you to do is Google all the songs online that you can find at 65 beats a minute and start playing those songs in the mind over and over. So now that 65 beats is becoming more ingrained mentally within the mind there.
So you don't try to shift their timing to something. You're looking more so, how can they really become more attuned to their own individual?
Yes, sir. That is exactly right. It's all about them. and we're all different. I can't, you know, a lot of players, I've had a lot of students say, I'll ask them, I'll say, do you know what your metronome beat might be? Oh yeah, mine's 72, like Dustin Johnson's. You can't match yours to somebody else's. And that's the worst thing you could try to do. We're all made differently. Each person has their own internal beat pattern. That person needs to find it. And when they can find it, apply stroke lengths, they're going to be like a human stamp meter.
You know, part of what we do, Stan, is, you know, we're really trying to help the athletes raise their ceiling of mental capacity. We're looking to increase their total mental capacity to engage in a task.
Yes, sir.
And when I hear you talking about putting, and we're talking about just the sport of golfing, so often you hear endurance stories and having be able, you know, putting the first day is not the same as the second or is the fourth. And there's this endurance issue of this, you know, total mental capacity that golfers have. In your opinion, when you're working with your students, how often are you talking to them about things like mental fatigue or a level of endurance that they need to have as they're finding this internal timing that you're helping them train?
Yeah, well, I think a lot of that, Lee, is I'm real big on sleep. I mean, we got to have an abundance amount of sleep to recoup mentally. We have to be hydrated. And I think when you're playing golf and you're an athlete, being hydrated is highly important when you're in competition. You also have to have energy. So from a golf standpoint, if we're playing 18 holes, what I carry around from a food standpoint, I carry a peanut butter sandwich, an apple, and a piece of hard candy, and then some fluids. I don't want to eat heavy. I want to eat light, but I want to keep the energy up. So fatigue is highly important. I'll say, here's what happens with golfers as they play, especially with putting as they go through a round. As they go through a round, their timing is going to get slower. And this is why they'll start missing putts a lot of times later in the round, especially short putts, because their timing gets slower. They're getting tireder. And then...
So when you say, sorry, real quick, when you say slower, do you mean like their internal timing is like from 65 to like 68?
It might go right. Well, 68 would be higher, but right. It might go from 65 to 63. Okay?
Gotcha.
So what's happening is, and then when stress is put on the golfer, their timing is going to slow down even more. Okay, so I'm always telling golfers, when they're putting especially, keep your timing up as you're playing through the round. Keep your timing up as you play through the round. Okay, again, mental fatigue. Another thing you can do mentally when you're out there on the golf course to calm yourself, for example, and I think this will help you with fatigue too, is let's say we're on a tee and I've got where we tee off, the tee box there. Okay, let's say you got on the right side, you've got your where you tee off from. Just move your eyes from one object to the right to one object to the left. Okay, tee markers is what I'm trying to say there. So you move your eyes from the right tee marker to the left tee marker, back and forth very quickly. You don't move your head, you just move your eyes. What that will do is calm your mind. and create more alertness within you. Okay? Another thing I tell people to do when they're on the golf course is don't look on the ground. Keep your head up and look at the sky, look at the sunshine, look at the birds, look at the trees. This keeps you more alert, and it keeps you from thinking again. Thinking is going to do what? Make us more tired. Okay? And we need to stay away from that. Now, off the course, I'm into psycho-cybernetics. So I'm real big on the person taking 5 or 10 minutes each day to visualize themselves doing something perfect on the golf course. Okay? And they should be as detailed as possible. If we see positive pictures of ourselves in our mind's eye, this is going to help us when we're performing on the golf course. And these little things affect fatigue too. If we're thinking positively of ourselves, we're not going to be as fatigued. Hope that answered your question.
Stan, when you talk about more of the golf game over the course of 18 holes, and you know, mental fatigue is typically not if but when, and it starts to chip away at how well we can engage in tasks. Yeah. And I think you said that stress slows down timing, right, and how it starts to impact the body. Being a vision, an eyes, mind, body, I'm going to call you more of a holistic putting coach, right? That's how I would conceptualize it. Walk us through a little bit of things that you're working specifically with your golfers, and I'm just going to use the phrase the perfect putt. Like the visualization process that you are encouraging golfers to engage in, to see things with detail, right? That shows more muscle memory that you can develop over time, right? So it's enhancing that execution come match time, because you've seen it in your mind so successfully. Yeah. What do you think is the most important part, the most salient pieces of the perfect putt?
All right, Lee, I'm going to take that question and I'm going to break it up. When I think of a perfect putt, I'm thinking of the ball rolling. So a perfect putt would have a good read, a good start line, and good speed. Okay? That would roll the ball in the hole. When a player is playing, they can address those three things. Okay, I missed the putt. Why did I miss the putt? Was it because of my read? Was it because I didn't start the ball on the line I wanted to? Or was it that I had bad speed? So for me, that's a putt. Now I'm going to take that question differently. That's a perfect putt, but what is the perfect stroke? That's a different thing. A stroke is different than a putt. So the perfect stroke, and here's how I characterize it, a perfect stroke is a stroke with geometric dimensions blended with the player's characteristic internal timing. So if I wanted to get the perfect stroke, I need the proper stroke lengths and ratios that match the distance of the putt on the speed of the greens that I'm playing, and then I need to blend that with the internal timing that we talked about a moment ago of the player. That's the perfect stroke. The perfect putt would be read line speed. Does that answer your question there?
It does. It does. And I appreciate you breaking down and distinguishing the difference, right? Because I think for most of us, we might not consider stroke versus putt, whereas you're really operationally defining the putt in three phases. which being an amateur golfer at best, from my own point of view, that makes a lot of sense. But now coupling it with the internal timing and the other element that you mentioned, I think makes sense from an execution standpoint. Because I think so much of golf, again, is between the ears. It's the part of the brain that we're trying to shift to. Right. And yes, some people use that loosely and say, well, that's how you focus. But we also know one of the things that we say is that what the mind perceives, the body believes.
Yep. Right.
Right. So with your I think your original phases was vision, mind, right. body. Right, with the perception of your mind coming from your Correct. Vision, your visual. Correct. And then what your mind perceives, then your body starts to believe from a physiological standpoint. That's the emotional piece. That's the physical tightness. That's the yips, right, Correct. To a degree when those things happen.
Yeah.
I think about also, too, what you've been saying a lot is this kind of deliberate intention to develop it. It's not something that's just going to happen. It's something that you can foster and you can nurture and you can develop to engage with, really, one, to become more familiar with, but then two, to more intentionally activate it.
Right.
Is that correct?
Correct, doctor. And what I'm helping the player do and what I'm doing as an instructor is I'm putting them into a position of understanding exactly what they need to do on every putt, instead of guessing, hunting for something to do. And that's what most people are doing, is hunting. So let me take this a little further if I can. So I have a player, and we have a putt in front of us. The first thing we want to do is walk off our distance. Then I go halfway between the golf ball and the hole on the low side, and I look at the grade. The grade is uphill or downhill. So if I go, and this way we have a downhill putt. So I would go and feel the slope with my feet to determine the percentage of grade that this putt would be going downhill. Once I know that, I actually subtract that distance off my original distance. From there, I go and read my slope. And if my slope has, let's say, right to left break of a certain percent, I would also take that percent off my original distance. So what I do is I get distance, grade, and slope, and I develop this putt into a effective distance or adjusted distance. So I might have a 25-foot putt, and now I've adjusted this distance to an 18-foot putt. So what am I going to do? I'm going to apply an 18-foot stroke that matches this putt using my internal timing. So what I just really did, guys, is I took a 25-foot putt with downgrade and side slope, and I turned it into an 18-foot putt that's completely flat and straight, and it's like we are standing on a flat, straight surface, and I'm just making an 18-foot stroke to a certain point, and the ball will roll that distance, and the landscape will then move the ball in the proper direction. Does that make sense?
It does. Stan, that process that you just walked us through, just for, you know, all of our listeners out there that are aspiring golfers that want to get better, that want to, you know, try to win their local club championships or even go beyond, how long do you think something like that takes, a process? Just from, right? Because there's a lot of science behind it. You say it very eloquently. You get right to the point, and here I am visualizing that I can train my 21 footer no problem. Yeah. How long is that taking?
Okay, that's a great question, Lee. And I have to put this into perspective for all of my students. I take my students through a core of putting. What I teach is green management, stroke management, time management, visual management, and mental management. Okay, I teach performance putting system. I have a system that I take these people through. It's built around understanding the coordination of stroke lengths, timing, acceleration, and effective reading of slopes, grades that are found on the greens. So to do that, they have to go through a core lessons of learning these things. To ingrain this, Lee, I tell all my players, it might take them 6 months, it might take them 9 months to really ingrain this. A lot of this depends upon their practice time and how much they put into it. But when they do, they're going to putt lights out. There is a learning process time. And I feel that's the way it is with just about anything in golf. Even if I was making a full swing change with an individual, that's going to take a player 6 to 9 months before they really are able to get it down. It might take others longer. You know, Tiger Woods changed his swing, and how long did it take him? Took him over 2 years, and he changed it 4 times. Okay, so we're talking of a putting stroke here. All of my putting is based on stroke lengths, timing. I'm working on timing, tempo, and acceleration. That's 3 legs of a stool. Learning those 3 legs of the stool must be very good. If one leg is broken, the stool falls. So we've got to learn how to create timing, tempo, and acceleration. Okay? Tempo and acceleration are usually results of good timing. If you have good timing, you should have good tempo, and that should allow you to put the proper impulse into the golf ball to create the proper acceleration into the golf ball.
What's the typical personality of the individual who is effective at implementing this? Like, what is the typical kind of presentation like when they're coming in and they're kind of receptive and they can integrate this a little bit faster? What do you typically see of the people who are successful at implementing this?
The fastest way to be effective here, doctor, is to understand stroke lengths first. Okay? So the first thing I do with any player is I video their stroke lengths. I video them from 10 feet. I video them from 20 feet. And then I bring them over and I show them their stroke lengths. Most of people's stroke lengths are pretty much the same on a 10-footer as a 20-footer, believe it or not. Okay? People can't believe it. So how does a person get a 20-foot putt to a hole that's got a 10-foot stroke? They just change their timing and their acceleration and tempo and add more force. That's what we don't want to do. That's what everybody does. We need to work at consistent timing. So, to your question, the fastest way for them to learn? Practice their stroke length and practice their internal timing. That's really all they have to do. And then roll the ball a foot past the hole. They don't ever have to have a cup. They can have a false cup. Just practice stroke lengths and practice their timing together and roll the ball a foot past their target. If they go to a faster green, I teach them how to test those stroke lengths and timing to adjust their stroke lengths to match the green speeds that they're playing on. So, all they have to do is, what I show them in their lesson is exactly what they practice when they leave me. And the person who spends time in practicing these links and their timing are the ones that get it. Okay? Now, I say 6 months to 9 months. There's going to be much success that happens way before that. Okay? I have players that come right out of the box And the next day, I'll get texts from a player. Oh, man, I just made 20 footers today. I just dropped 4 strokes off my putting today. Okay? So they might come out of the box and do that. But are they going to be consistent? Maybe not. Okay? That's why they have to keep practicing this continually.
Stan, for all of our high performers out there that are listening, and you just, you know, first and foremost, thank you so much for sharing your own head game that you're coaching, that you're promoting. What tips or strategies would you have for your golfers, for young aspiring golfers, to one, stay mentally fit, but two, really take their, what else can they do other than incorporating your system to really become the best putter they can be and contribute to their overall game?
The best putter they can do is do a lot of random putting. Don't stand in one spot for 20 minutes rolling 4 footers into a hole. That really, in my opinion, does not teach the golfer a lot. They're better off taking one golf ball and going to random holes with random slopes, random grades, random distances, and reading the putt and going through their process. Don't just walk up to the ball and start putting. Continue to go through their entire process. Okay, one of the key things I teach is how to maneuver on the green. People do not know how to maneuver on the green. This is the most important aspect, is how to maneuver on the green. Because all the drama is now taking place, and it all takes place on the green. So we've got to know how to maneuver. And when we know how to maneuver, Lee, we have a calm, confident mind. And when we have a calm, confident mind, that golfer believes he can make every putt. So this is why I'm trying to put golfers in a place of understanding of what they need to do when they get on the green. So good nutrition, good sleep, good hydration, random practice to me with putting is the best practice with putting instead of standing in one spot.
Stan, talk to us a little bit about passion projects that you're presently working on, you know, just for our listening audience. Tell everyone where you're located, how you can be reached, what's the best way to get a hold of you, and just share some things that, you know, you're presently work on that are of value to you.
Okay. My website is BocaRatonGolfLesson.com. My Instagram is Academy of Putting. My email is srmoore0724@gmail.com. So those are the three ways they could get in contact with me. Passion things, I'm working on doing some writing right now. I'm interested in doing some presentations in our PGA section. I think once a person understands that what they know, if they can write it down, it helps them understand it even better, and it helps them project it or say it to others. So I think it's important that whatever you know, to write it down. If you don't write it down, others will say it for you. So those are sort of my passion projects. And Lee, my passion project is just my work. It's what I do every day. And it's all based on what? Stroke lengths and timing and green reading. Okay, I teach the totality of putting. Again, that is my passion. What is the totality of putting? Green management, stroke management, time management, visual management, mental management. We have to put all that together to develop the proper stroke. When we have the proper stroke, Lee, we will make the proper putt.
The totality of putting, Stan, that should be either the name of your book or the name... the name of your public speaking tour, The Totality of Putting. Because when I see that, I'm getting in line. I just want to thank you for two things. One, sharing so much of your knowledge, but two, I think so often, especially in the sport of golf, there's a lot of insecurity for the mass majority of golfers because they simply don't know how to approach something, looking at it through a different lens. And what you did for us today is breaking down how to putt, looking at it through a uniquely different lens with simple, straightforward language that I think really makes the art of putting a simpler process and one that's more approachable. And that's only good for the game, and hopefully it translates to, you know, your work and your level of success. So I just want to personally thank you for taking the time to explain that to us and for being a part of the head game.
Can I say one other thing, Lee?
Sure can, Stan.
In my opinion, most people believe putting is a block on the end of a stick. And I really don't think most people believe they can get better with their putting. And they don't want to get better with the putting. And the reason they believe that is because they're satisfied with where they are. They really don't believe they can get much better. As long as they're not three putting, they think they're a good putter. I hope I've enlightened people today to understand that there's a real art and science to putting, and that putting can really, you come to understand what you need to do, and people just don't understand what they need to do with putting.
Well, hopefully after today they do.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of our listeners too, some of them who do play golf, some of them might not actually, but I think even your lessons just as a whole of how you break it down, something as simplistic but very nuanced as putting, I think where people think you can just, okay, go out there and kind of swing. Everybody's maybe played miniature golf, but I think this can apply to, you know, whether you're an entrepreneur, whether you're another athlete working on a different skill set. Timing and rhythm is always a critical piece, how you adjust it, but also how you break it down. So I really appreciate that insight into your world, into your craft, into your passion. But I think it's going to be able to help a lot other people too, in terms of applying those kind of breaking down the process, really from a very scientific, I almost needed to kind of bring out my equation book of really understanding how you break it down. So that was really
good. Doctor, I always say that putting is simple, but it's very difficult.
For sure. So thank you, Stan. All the best to you. And again, sharing your own head game and how you work with your athletes to contribute to the art of putting. And hopefully our listeners garnered something rather significant today. So thank you.
Great. Thank you. Enjoyed it very much.